You don't want to just sit in your house all by yourself and be like, this is what all my money goes to.
Yeah, just this house. I might as well spend all my time here, get my money's worth.
Right. Hello, and welcome to Planantials Podcast, Future Rich. My name is Barbara Ginty, and I'm your host and also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I am here with my guest tonight, Morgan. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Barb. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'm excited about this episode.
Yeah, me too.
So, to give our listeners a little background, we know each other, and you have been inspired to get on the FIRE movement. So I think this one will be really interesting because I feel like the FIRE movement is picking up speed here. So give us some, our listeners, some details, age, location, profession, all that jazz.
Yeah. So I am currently 31. I'm living in Salt Lake City and I'm working as an engineer, in the aerospace industry.
Super impressive. And why don't you give them a little background about what you did previously? You took a little break from this industry.
Yeah. I mean, I was working as essentially a rocket scientist for about 6 years and just feeling really burnt out. I had some big adventures that I wanted to go on and I asked if I could take a sabbatical just to kind of, recharge and do my thing. And they weren't willing to work with me there. So I gave them my notice and I ended up quitting back in February of 2019. And I attempted to thru-hike the Pacific Crest Trail. I got an injury and ended up getting off trail early, but I was planning on going back in 2020, so I didn't go back to engineering. I actually worked as a snowboard instructor over the winter. And then with COVID, obviously, I couldn't really do anything last summer. So that plan fell through. And, I really can't stay unemployed for 3 years in a row. So I got back. It's a long time. I mean, fortunately, I saved a ton of money before I quit and it's been totally fine. But at this point, I started back at my new job almost a month ago. And it's really hard going back to a desk job when you've been doing your own thing and going on adventures for 2 years. So, that's when I started looking into the FIRE movement and decided that that's something that I think is really important to me and my lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that if you know, at least in my opinion, if you know what you're working towards, then it makes it easier to say like, okay, I'm going to go back to work and I'm going to work for this set period of time. And then I'm going to change my lifestyle so that it accommodates the lifestyle that I want.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
Cause you obviously have a good skill set to, having been a former rocket scientist and now, engineering in the aerospace industry. So obviously you have a profession, so you can get a good job with benefits, but I feel like since I know you, you like the outdoor adventure space better.
Yeah.
So we can do both, leverage your professional experience and then get you to an early retirement. So what we had chatted about a little bit before you came on the podcast was I really like the FIRE movement, but I like it from the perspective of separating out your early retirement from your retirement. Cause I like to think of the retirement, kind of like as the castle or the golden goose or whatever analogy you want to use, but you have to really protect it. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody. I don't know if you know anybody, but I don't know anybody who wants to be working when they're in their 70s.
Yeah, no.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. I know people who have, and there are some people that really love their jobs and don't want to retire, but I would say on average, most people say to me, I'm tired and I'm ready to be done and do a fun job or something that, not the pressure and stress of your career position. So I like to separate out the two goals. So, and the way I like to do that is you can just run an estimate of what you think you're going to need for retirement and then just have that be the money that doesn't get touched until you're actually in retirement, because the compounding of interest factor there is so important that you could still do the early retirement as long as you leave the retirement monies alone. And then you save specifically for an early retirement or a partial retirement, which I think is the best way to go, where you have some income coming in and then you rely also on your investments to be able to take maybe a more fun job. Like,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I would get bored if I didn't do anything, but yeah, it'd be great to be an instructor or work at a national park or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, something fun and outdoors. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your plan to get you there. So right now, so you just started. Congrats on getting a job during a pandemic.
Thanks. It was stressful.
Not an easy feat. Not an easy feat. Mm-hmm. So I have a very impressive spreadsheet here that I would like to point out to our listeners, because I always say how I really love a good Excel spreadsheet. This one is very impressive because it has multiple tabs on it.
So many tabs.
So many tabs, yeah. That I actually wasn't looking at all the right tabs to start. But why don't you give us a breakdown of your income with your new job, your expenses, and so forth.
Okay.
Because I think that you've done a good job with the budgeting.
Mm-hmm. So do you want me to go over like the, you know, the exact amounts and, or I guess,
yeah,
kind of an overview? Okay.
Or you could do like a high level overview.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, grossing about $92,800, and you know, I am also planning to do, you know, have separate, you know, 60 plus retirement, and then also have kind of separate stuff for my early retirement. So planning on, you know, maxing out my 401k, which, you know, lowers my taxable income.
Yep.
And then, so I've got my mortgage, and something that I'm doing to help pay the mortgage, which, you know, it's a good, you know, price. It's only like $1,200, which is great. We refinanced, so that brought our payment down, which was great.
Oh, you did? What did you refinance to?
What do you mean, like our percentage?
Yeah, your rate.
2.8, I want to say.
That is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's saving us like hundreds of dollars a month. And we were originally paying just a ton of extra money on the mortgage. But, you know, now after talking to you, now we're going to invest that money. Me and my partner are going to invest that money instead of putting extra payments on the house.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about marital status. So you are living with your partner. Mm-hmm. So there's two of you.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to differentiate between single and non-single.
Yeah. But since she was paying the mortgage and everything while I was off having fun, so now that I'm working again, I'll be paying the full mortgage. But also to help with that, we have basement tenants, and that
fantastic.
Yeah, and that money will cover like 2/3 of the mortgage. And then a friend of ours, he's going to be moving in actually next weekend, so that'll be a little bit extra coming in rent monies that'll cover most of the mortgage.
Yeah, I would like to highlight this because this is something I talk about, like side hustles a lot on the show, and like what you can do to kind of leapfrog in your financial goals. I did another podcast because we record in bulk, but I did another podcast today and I talked about this, that, you know, it can be a huge way to leapfrog in your finances if you can negate some of your housing costs. And so you're doing two things. You have a basement rental, and then you're bringing on a roommate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that will almost negate your mortgage costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really nice. that's why I picked this house. Was I, you know, I was looking at the price for a house that was, you know, just for me. And, you know, it was more than I wanted to pay, even though I could afford it. Like, you know, I want to use my money for other things and not most of it going to my mortgage. So I looked specifically for a house.
You don't want to just sit in your house all by yourself and be like, this is what all my money goes to.
Yeah, just this house. I might as well spend all my time here, get my money's worth.
Right. So I think that's fantastic. So essentially with your new roommate and the basement rental and the refinance with the mortgage, it's mm-hmm. like you're like $100 shy of covering your mortgage expense.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
And then you don't have a lot of expenses.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was getting ready to through hike the Pacific Crest Trail, I didn't want to have to be making any kind of payments while I was on the trail so that I didn't have to save as much money. So before I left, I actually paid off my truck and my student loans early. So that all I would have is the mortgage, which my partner was going to pay.
Fantastic.
So yeah, like I'm able to keep my expenses pretty low. I mean, even when I bought my truck, I could have bought like the newest Tacoma there was at the time, but like, again, you know, I don't want to spend all my money on making payments. That's kind of like one of my fears is that I'll get like caught up in the rat race where it's like I have to work until I'm 65 or whatever because I'm always making payments on the, you know, the nice house and the newest truck and all the toys and stuff. And it like, that's like my nightmare.
But it happens to people, and I think the word for it, or like people have coined it, is lifestyle creep. Mm-hmm. Where as you make more money, you increase your lifestyle. And from experience, increasing your lifestyle and then taking 10 steps backwards is not fun. So I always think it's better to like stay below your means and mm-hmm. like help yourself financially than, and that's my own personal perspective, obviously, right? It's like, that's not a CFP's opinion. That's my personal choice. But I agree with you. I think it's smart to always go spend less than you can afford, because then it provides you luxuries in the other areas of your life, like vacation or outdoor adventures or retiring early, because I think that's more valuable.
Yeah, than, like, agreed.
The nicest car, the best house.
Yeah, experiences are worth a lot more to me than the stuff.
Totally agree. So when we're looking at your total necessary expenses, I feel like I'm going to use you as like the prototype now that I have your spreadsheet. So your housing cost is $100 after the income property, you know, the
plus my other side hustle.
Yeah. What is your other side hustle?
So I'm also on the weekends, I'm teaching adaptive snowboarding with Wasatch Adaptive Sports.
Fantastic.
It's not a lot of money, but I mean, it's fun and it gets me out on the snow.
Yeah, which is fantastic. So then you have that coming in addition. Mm-hmm. So then let me just see your spreadsheet. So your total, so then with utilities, okay, so basically with your income from instructing and the basement tenant and the roommate, cover the mortgage totally and still have an extra $100.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we have $180 for utilities. We have internet, cell phone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of that is split, obviously, with my partner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, utilities are not $180, I wish.
So then everything in the household then is kind of split, right? Mm-hmm. The rest of the expenses. And so your share, it looks like you're doing it 50-50. So then your share is going to come in to be, it would be $837 I have, but you're getting $100. We have $100 left over from your side hustle. So you're spending, we'll just round up, like $725, $750 in necessary spending.
Yeah. And I mean, part of that in that tab is just a little extra so that I make sure I allocate some money for like going out to eat or out to the bar or whatever. So I wouldn't even necessarily say that's necessary, but I mean, it kind of is.
It's nice to do something fun.
Yeah.
I will say this is one of the most impressive budgets. I would also like to point out, because I don't think you brought it up, but you grow a lot of your own food.
Yeah. I love gardening. And I'm planning on expanding the garden some more this year. I'm trying to decide how I'm going to have enough time for all of this with all.
Yeah, because you have a full-time job and a side hustle.
Yeah.
And you have a tenant and you have a roommate.
Well, I'm going to get my roommate to help. Then, you know, maybe I'll share some vegetables with him.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
So that is fantastic because you have a really good salary. So if we're looking at total monthly spending of, we'll just call it 700. We'll just round up here and call it $750. I will say it's probably the lowest budget I've seen so far this year on this season.
Well, I mean, I don't need a lot to
live. I think the key is that you negated your housing costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because it's usually one, it's usually, and you already paid off your student loan. So I would say some of the biggest budget items I see are housing. And then obviously, you know, student loans usually are pretty substantial. So the fact that you don't have that and you have no debt and then no house, really no housing with what you're, you know, your little, someone called it another podcast called house hacking. I was like, house hacking, but that's, this is what she meant when she said house hacking. So how to hack it so that you don't have to pay for the house.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, so let's talk about your savings. Cause that's really what your primary goal is going forward. Mm-hmm. So where are your savings? I know what we're putting towards, because your monthly, your net pay is approximately $3,000 a month, we're estimating. I know you just started working.
Yeah.
So your net pay after expenses. So you should be netting around, we think around $3,700, give or take. And then we have about $700 in expenses. So you should have about $3,000 to play with at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. So why don't you walk me through what you currently have saved and then where you're planning on allocating.
Yeah, so I think I have like right around 15,000 that is still saving in my savings, even after being unemployed forever. so yeah, that's gonna get moved over to my emergency savings.
Okay.
And since, you know, my expenses are so low, I think that might like cover it.
Yeah, I mean, because like, what? How much do you have in your emergency fund, or is the $15,000?
Yeah, that $15,000. I'm gonna move that into my emergency fund. I'm gonna put it over in. I just opened an Ally account.
So, oh, great!
Yeah, so I'm gonna move it over there.
That's where I have my emergency fund.
Yeah,
that that's a recommendation, but I like their interface a lot. Yeah. I think they're easy to use.
Yeah, agreed. And I also like that it won't be as visible, because like my problem is that when I see that I have all this money in my savings, I'm like, oh, you know, I went a little over my budget this month. I'll just pull it from my savings and I'll pay it back next paycheck. And then, you know, that just like doesn't happen. So
yes, out of sight, out of mind is, I think, very critical for most people. Mm-hmm. That's why mine's in LA as well.
Yeah.
I don't check it. It's just there.
Yeah, exactly. It just needs to be away, out of sight.
So that's perfect. I think that's a good number for emergency fund, because you have tenants now and you have a roommate now, but I think it's good to have a little extra just in case you didn't have the income coming in. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good amount for an emergency savings.
Yeah. So then beyond that, I'm planning on doing about $250 to my Roth each month. I do, you know, eventually I'm going to need a new truck, and I don't want to have, you know, this
a loan
or just like a huge expense right up front. So you know, I'm wanting to put in like $300 a month into my like a vehicle bucket in Ally.
Perfect. So that, yes, because you can name them there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I made a few buckets and you know, total what percentage to distribute everything, so you'll have a little vehicle account. But one of my questions though is that, you know, this money is probably going to be sitting for hopefully, you know, 5 to 8 years until I've run my Tacoma into the ground. So you know, I'm like, maybe I should put that in my brokerage account.
So I normally say that you have to have at least a 2-year time horizon before you put money in the market, because if you look historically at historical performance of the market, not to say that this is indicative of future performance, but if you just look at the history and we're using that as a barometer, usually the down cycles are no longer than 2 years. Not a guarantee, but so that's where I've come with the benchmark of you shouldn't put money in the market if it's going to be for less than 2 years. Mm-hmm. But if you think it's going to be like 6 to 8 years, you could always do something conservative with it. And then, but you wouldn't want to leave it in until you're, you know, till when you need it, right? You could put it in for a couple of years and then take it out in advance of needing a new vehicle, right? Like ideally take it out 2 years in advance of needing a new vehicle.
Interesting. So that I wouldn't potentially lose.
Jeopardize it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because what you would hate to have happen, and like March was with the market dipped, and the March recovered really quickly. And like nobody, I don't think at the time, thought it was going to recover really quickly. There's a few thoughts on that. Like one was like, well, we're going to have a double dip, meaning it dipped so fast and recovered so quickly that then therefore there should be another dip. Mm-hmm. Just because it wasn't sustained that long. So if you were to put it in the, if you were going to invest your money that you have earmarked for a car, you know, a truck purchase, I would just say, I wouldn't leave it in up until like when you start getting high mileage on your truck and you think you could get one in the next couple of years, then I would tone down the investment risk or use cash. I'm not opposed to cash because the way I look at it is it's going to be there when you need it, right? So if you got a good deal on a truck and you had already taken the money out of the market, yes, you maybe lost potential for upside for that time frame, but you could have also had it gone down.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to look at the down aspect of it. Like, are you willing to risk, you know, the monies for that potential gain, which maybe, like, let's say it's conservatively invested and your potential gain is 6%. Are you willing to risk 10% loss for a 6% gain when it's earmarked to buy you something, you know, that you need for your day-to-day life?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I would look at it. I don't think there's anything wrong with putting it in for a few years. And then, you know, if it's made some money and you think you're going to need a new truck, take it out. But I wouldn't jeopardize that purchase by leaving it in too long or too close to the date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
Well, I like to err on the side of being conservative. Because I've been on the side where people have like left things in maybe a little too close and it didn't work out in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, like, God forbid I get in an accident or something and I need that money like immediately and everything's down and now I've lost money.
And that's why like the emergency fund is so critical too, because let's say something came up immediately and you had to have money. That's why the cash is so important. A lot of people ask about investing the emergency fund because, as we talked about, your emergency fund, ideally you don't have an emergency fund, right? Yeah. And it's just sitting there year after year after year after year. And right now interest rates are nothing. Interest rates will hopefully go up at some point in the future, but like it potentially could sit there for 5 years and make nothing, right? Like pennies. But it prevents a future problem, right?
Yeah.
Like if you had an emergency in March and your other monies were invested, you could use the emergency fund, which would have bridged you to the market recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All the little pieces play their own role. So I would say because you think your truck will last long, you could put it in the market for a little bit, but not, I wouldn't leave it in there too long.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Tacomas are supposed to be, you know, pretty reliable trucks that, you know, getting up to 300,000 miles is seems like pretty routine. So that's the hope. It'll be a while.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Okay, so 250 towards a Roth, 300 towards a vehicle, which I really like the idea that you know you're going to need a vehicle, so let's save for it in advance because it's little bites rather than a big bite, which always is more manageable. And then the plan is 1150 towards just an investment account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm still playing with these numbers a little bit just because, you know, I felt like I don't feel like I did my W-4 quite right through work, so I felt like I was taking out a little too much taxes, but, hopefully these numbers are final because I like them.
But, well, if they're taking out too much tax, then they could be a little bit better. And you can always play with your, did you do a zero?
Yeah.
Claim? Mm-hmm. Okay. Versus a one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you can always play with it a little bit. Hopefully these are about right. They shouldn't be too far off.
Yeah. It shouldn't be too far off, but I'm hoping that maybe I'll get just a little bit more.
A smidge more. Okay.
Yeah. So then, beyond the brokerage account, planning on doing $500 a month into just regular savings, and then $500 to the house account, because my house was built in the 60s and had zero updates, so, which is also, you know, what saved me on money was that my house didn't cost as much.
Right.
And I've seen some really bad remodels when I was looking for a house, so I was like, I think I could do this better myself. So
yes, and being an engineer, and I will also say you're very handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually planning a big remodel for the basement. Our current basement tenants are house hunting right now. And so when they move out, I'm planning on doing a remodel and then raising the rent a little bit down there.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So we have all of your money basically then accounted for, with the majority, I would say, of your money going towards saving for future goals.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like to leave like a little bit of wiggle room, just, you know, if there's unexpected expenses or like this month, you know, since I just started my new job, like I needed some new clothes. And I also bought myself a new PAL board. So that was I did go a little over budget on my fun monies.
Yeah, and it's important, especially because this is a very ambitious plan, which I like, but I think it's important to also have fun money, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's why you're working.
Yes.
Let's talk about how we're going to get you over to FIRE. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Future Rich offers 3 online classes in partnership with SUNY Ulster? Well, you're in luck. We do. We have our Future Rich Signature course, our Student Loans course, and our brand new Social Security course. All of these classes can be found on our website at www.futurerichpodcast.com.
Okay, so, and then also I want to add, how much do you currently have for your retirement savings? Because when you're working before...
I currently actually have my Fidelity pulled up right now. I have $117,500 roughly.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. And I don't know, let me see, did you project out what that's going to be for yourself in?
I put it, it's in there. It's on
the I'm just going to find it.
Yeah, just scroll down.
It's a very big spreadsheet.
Yeah, it seems.
Okay, retirement savings 401k.
Yeah. And at the beginning of the year, it was at 111,000. So that's what it says on the spreadsheet.
Oh, okay. So you mapped it out using an 8% return rate. So year 0 is this current year, you're 31, and then you projected out that at age 60, it's going to be worth $3.2 million
mm-hmm.
based on an 8% compounding return.
Yeah.
And this is why I like to separate it. Because, you know, you obviously are very diligent about your budgeting and about your money, right? Like I have seen so many budgets, I can't even begin to tell you, because I do this for my day job and then I do this for my side hustle. So you're obviously very skilled at your budgeting and doing little side hustles and paying down your debt and living below your means and having a really good budget. So now that you already at 31 have zero debt, you own a house, you have rental income, you have a side hustle, and you already have $117,000 saved for retirement, that alone, based on the 8% compounding interest, should be worth in the future, if all works out, about $3.2 million.
Yeah. And originally when I put this spreadsheet together, I forgot to include the company match on the 401k. So I put that in the other day and I'm like, yes, this looks good.
The company match is amazing.
Yeah, it's a good match.
Amazing. It's a great match. And so you're getting that and then you're still contributing. So as long as we do that and you have that worked out that you're going to do, you know, if you stay with this company and you work there from now, we're essentially putting it down as 32 because you're almost 32, mm-hmm. 32 through 45.
Yeah. Right? What my plan is to actually, since I don't think that I will finish all my house remodel stuff between now and 45, just because, you know, my budget's so tight. If I still have, you know, a lot of stuff that needs to be done on the house at that point, at age 46, I would stop putting the money into the 401k and I would instead put it towards the house. Though I think I would probably keep putting at least like the minimum in to get the match.
Exactly.
Free money.
Yeah, just get the free money. Yeah. Yes, free money.
Yeah, and I just realized I didn't put that in the spreadsheet, so I'll have to update it.
Well, that's okay. So that means your numbers would just be better.
Yeah, just better. But yeah, so, you know, if I need to after age 45, then I'll start, instead of investing the money, I'll put it towards the house.
Perfect. And then you can get the house all squared away so that when you go into your FIRE segment of your life, that you have that already done.
Yeah.
And okay. Fund it. Mm-hmm. And I just want to point out for all the listeners, we're starting with the 401k balance being 111 because it was a little bit lower when you did the spreadsheet. And this is including what you're contributing plus what your company matches and an 8% compounding return. And so then that way, when you get to your FIRE lifestyle, we have the house done and you've already, what I like to say is like you front load it your retirement. So at that point you'll have enough for retirement when you get there. And so now it's just about living on the money that we're saving from this point till then.
Yeah. I mean, it makes such a huge difference. Like the money that you put in the first 10 years.
Huge. Critical. Huge difference.
Yeah.
It's the numbers don't seem real until you like, I mean, I think they seem real. I feel like people don't realize what a difference it makes to save. I mean, because you saved 100 and essentially 111,000 basically before you were 30.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all because you started early.
Yeah, I started as soon as I started my first job, which my dad like drilled into me. Don't be like me and have to play catch up on your retirement.
It's so much better to front load it. I always tell everybody, like, it's so much better to be on a budget and be strict about your spending because it's a short period of your life that you're going to do it. And it makes an incredible difference long term.
Yes.
For those early sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then let's talk about the FIRE aspect. So the whole reason you're putting, you're saving for the car, which is smart because we want to make for the truck because we want to make sure that you don't have a big variable expense. We're saving for the house because we need to do house projects. And because, as we all know from listening to the podcast, houses have their own emergencies.
Yeah. As we both know.
As we both know very well. And for all of our listeners, you should learn houses have their own emergencies. And they run the gamut for what the emergency is, but they usually tend to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the brokerage account is what you're working on so that you can live off of those investments for the FIRE aspect of your plan, because those monies are not retirement. So we're not jeopardizing a future retirement. If for some reason it doesn't go as planned, we still have your retirement. Taken care of.
No penalties for early withdrawal.
And exactly. No penalties for early withdrawal. And also, well, as of today, we don't know what will happen in the future. As of today, the capital gains rate is more advantageous. It also, which we talked about, because it's a little complicated, but we did talk about how perhaps when you are in an early retirement in the FIRE segment, that maybe at that point, depending on what your income is and depending on what the situation is at the time and the tax laws, but that maybe you converted Roth monies because you would be in a lower tax bracket potentially.
Yeah.
Food for thought in the back, but I wanted to mention that to the listeners so they could hear that concept too.
Yeah, I should have done that when you told me to do it last year, but I just got like, it just, I don't know, it was just seemed very intimidating to me, and then I didn't do it, and now I'm like, oh, I should have done it.
Well, we have opportunities in the future with the FIRE, because you're in a high income bracket now, so I think taking advantage of the pre-tax options, lowering your taxable income, allowing you to save more for these goals, and then when you go to the FIRE aspect, when we get you there, when you're going to be, you know, ideally instructing and living off your investment return, you'll be in a lower income bracket and you could then do it at that point.
Yeah.
Ideally, if it's still, depending on what our tax situation looks like in the future. Yeah. So let's talk about the brokerage account. So we're going to be saving ideally $1,150. We're just starting. This is like, so for our listeners, this is a new plan, right?
Yeah.
This is not something that has got, I think the FIRE, and you started for the FIRE revolution with your sabbatical.
Yeah. So this will be brand new brokerage account this year.
Perfect. And so with the $1,150, and that's after tax, and that would be monthly. So you would be doing $13,800 a month contributing to your investment account, which you plan on living or having supplement your income in the future. So let's talk about where we think that is going to be if you continue to do that from now, which will be aged. Essentially, I hate to round up your age, Morgan, but I'm rounding you up to 32.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm almost there.
You're almost there.
Yeah.
I don't like to age people.
And I did try to account for capital gains tax on my spreadsheet.
Yes, I see that you added that in. And so for our listeners, that means, so every, when you have just a pure investment account, when it's not sheltered inside of a work retirement plan or a Roth or a traditional IRA, you get a 1099 every year, which you have to pay tax on for essentially either dividends, interest, or capital gains. And, you know, the capital appreciation or price appreciation, if you will. So the if it went from whatever you purchased from $100 to $105, you don't pay on that till you sell. But any sort of the income that's generated, you pay on on an annual basis at a capital gains rate, and your capital gains rate depends on your tax bracket where you'll fall.
Yeah, so, I was a little bit confused because some of it said, yeah, it was based on your income, and then other stuff was like, yeah, it's usually like 15%, and so I wasn't really sure about that one.
So whether you get paid 15% or 20, right now it's 15 and 20, so whether you pay 15% or 20% depends on where you fall ordinary income mm-hmm. bracket, determines your capital gains bracket.
Okay.
It's kind of convoluted. Mm-hmm. Just like the rest of our tax code. We like to make it as confusing as possible.
Yeah.
I know. So, yeah. So 15%, I think, is a, I'm not a tax professional, but if I had to take a guess, that would be my guess as well.
Okay. I did a lot of Googling for this, so.
Yeah. And so sometimes with this stuff, because there's like multiple aspects of it, right? There's the investments, there's the taxes, there's the payroll component of it, right? Like, yeah. Zero, claiming zero versus claiming one, and what's going to be coming out of your paycheck. So some of it just has to get tweaked as you go along, especially because you have a new job. So you'll have a better idea when you go to file next year will be your first, you know, filing for 2021 will mm-hmm. be your first year. So some of it has to be tweaked, but you're pretty spot on. It would be small adjustments.
Okay.
But I do think assuming a 15% capital gains rate makes sense.
Okay.
For what you're doing.
Cool.
So it looks like, so we're assuming an annual increase in the salary so that your savings goes up year over year mm-hmm. so that you're able to continue
yeah,
to
save more. Yeah, I was estimating like a 2% merit increase every year.
So then we see the value of the account go up. So it looks like the target, right, is that we get it close to 400, I'm just going to use round numbers, mm-hmm. 450,000 by the time you are 47.
Yeah.
And that's using an 8% compounding investment return. Mm-hmm. Did it scare you to write the number 47 down? I'm impressed that you put all of your ages down on the spreadsheet.
Well, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, I want to retire when I'm still, you know, healthy enough to go on adventures. And yeah, you know, I've actually, since I've been thinking so much about, you know, me in my late 40s, I've been looking around at my coworkers and I'm like, you know, how old do I think they are? It's like, are they in their 40s or are they like 50? Like, you know, what am I going to look like when I'm that age?
I think it's really interesting because we talk a lot about obviously the concept of the podcast is future rich, like worrying about your future self. And I've like, always visualize like the 7-year-old version, right? Like I talk a lot about how important it is to take care of your retirement. And I think just because I work with so many retirees and I have to tell some people that they can't retire.
Yeah.
But I never thought about like the middle ages. So it's like interesting to see it, but I feel like that's a good way to do it. Like I love this idea because like it's not really that far away. Like, I mean, yes, it is far away, but it'll happen, right? Like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
someday.
So like looking at your colleagues and being like, well, I think that person's about the age, but I'm going to be able to say, see you later. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
It's, I think, a good way to visualize it.
Yeah.
But so, okay. So if we get you there, so 400 and approximately 50,000. And so at that point, then the plan is to pull money out each year to supplement your income so that you can take what we'll say is like a fun job. Like you're still going to work, but mm-hmm. you don't want to have the stress of having an engineering job with the regular hours, right?
Yeah.
Or longer
sitting
hours.
At my desk all day.
And sitting at your desk all day. So each year you're planning on pulling out 30,000. Is that right?
Like minimum. Yeah.
Minimum. Okay. So I just want to make sure. And then you're anticipating annual income of about 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the plan is to pull out just about 6%. We're doing FIRE our own way. I'm not sure this is the way everyone else does it, but the way I have it, or the way we talked about doing it for you, is that we will spend this money down until you are 60, and then at 60, because you are beyond the 59 and a half age, we will then start using your retirement monies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Or depending on how the investments go, maybe they're able to support a higher distribution rate. So maybe they can, you know, maybe they're making 8% every year and it can support 6-7% withdrawal, and then it doesn't deplete the account. But we have it planned for you that it depletes your account by the time you're 60, and at that point you start using your retirement savings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with the 8% return, I could probably pull maybe closer to 55. Though, once I'm at the point where I'm pulling from this account, like, would I want to move everything to like a more conservative?
Yeah. So here's what I like to do, because we talked about this, and this is not scientific. This is kind of my rule of thumb. But I like to have usually, and so let's just go over like where we are in the future. At the future, you still have an emergency fund. You have no major expenses. We'll just say you increase the property value. You have a tenant. You probably don't even have a mortgage at this point. 48. No, you still have a mortgage at this point, right?
Well, yes, not making extra payments.
Yeah. Okay. Still have a mortgage at this point. We'll just say you have a tenant. So we're close to still covering that amount. So still low budget. So I would say with your emergency fund, which is going to be about 6 months worth of money, you probably would want about a year's worth of your distribution, maybe a little over a year, in either a cash or cash equivalent account inside the brokerage account. So I don't ever like to pull monthly distributions that we know we're going to spend, like we're earmarked to spend, mm-hmm. and leave it in the same investments. I would also say then when you get to this future age where we know we're going to be spending down the account, we probably want to turn down the heat on the money we're going to use in the 1 to 3 year range.
Yeah.
With a year being the most conservative.
Okay. So instead of shifting all of that money to more conservative, just shift like a, you know, a year or three's amount of money to more conservative so that it doesn't fluctuate as much?
Yeah. So think about it. I think some people call it like the bucket theory, I think. Think about it as buckets. So your time mitigates risk. So if we know we're going to be spending these monies from age 48 to 59, the money you're going to use at year when you're 59 years old, you know, is 11 years out from when you start, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 11 years is a longer time in the market. So you can take a little bit more risk with the money you're spending that year because we have longer for it to recover. But the money that you need at age 48, when you're 48, needs to be basically cash, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's already being spent. Like, we know that you need that money for that year for your expenses. Mm-hmm. So you look at it like a bucket, and I normally do like 1 to 3 years and then like 4 to 6 and then 6+ would be like kind of how I'd break it down. And so your 6+ money, 6 years out, could be a little bit more aggressive. And then the money you need sooner, just incrementally. So if you're going to be spending that money for the year, and we know that what you have, I don't know if you have your year planned out, but my years are like always planned out. So you know what you're going to need your money for that year, then it should be probably in cash. And then year two and year three could be a little bit more, could be conservative, maybe not as conservative, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I like to do it that way so that we know, I don't ever want to have money earmarked for something and then be looking at the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I wouldn't make the whole bucket. Like if you think of that as your fire bucket, I wouldn't make the whole bucket conservative once you hit fire, but I would make it based on when the money is going to be spent.
Mm-hmm. So what I guess like rate of return could I expect on the more conservative stuff?
So cash right now I would say is zero.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it just depends on where interest rates are going to be in the future. It's a little hard to say because interest rates right now are like pretty low, so I would just say you're 1 to 2 year out, I would probably expect nothing on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would say an 8% overall return on that entire account is probably not as realistic once you start pulling, mm-hmm. but something lower because you're going to have a year or 2 years worth of money in there that's not making anything. And then maybe like a little bit more as you move up the time horizon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to work that into my spreadsheet.
That is a harder thing to work into the spreadsheet, I will tell you, because it's basically like a waterfall, right? So like this money here is going to make nothing, but this money back here is going to make something, mm-hmm. but then every year it's going to be different, right?
Yeah.
So what you could do just to do it, like just to have an idea, is you could just for this bucket, turn it down a little from in terms of what you're estimating your return is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's still in the future. So we just don't know what interest rates are going to be when you're 48. Mm-hmm. And so it's possible that we are in an environment where you make 3 or 4% at the bank, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's a possible reality that we could live in because that was a reality we lived in in like the two, you know, mid-2000s, right? So it's possible it comes back. I remember when my bank account paid 5%.
Wow.
Right?
I do not.
I'm older, damn it.
I think I remember when it was making 2%.
When it was like 2000, I want to say it was 2006, maybe.
Hmm.
Might have been 2006. It was very early. It was very early on. I remember that they were giving free, it was free. You got free coffee and you might've gotten something else if you like went and opened an account. And I was working at a big firm at the time. And we actually had free coffee. So like, it's kind of funny that everybody went over there for the free coffee across the street and not the free coffee in our cafeteria. I don't know. I don't even remember it being different, but I remember everybody from work was like, oh my God, you should go across the street. If you open an account, you get like free coffee. And like the account's paying a lot of money and like everybody did it. And so then they shut it down. Like they had to like shut it down. I don't think they realized like there was
like all the coffee for you guys.
Yeah, and like I think we like swamped their little storefront. I think it was like more of a marketing ploy to get the account going, you know, like to like advertise this account. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they realized there was like a bunch of people like literally who just graduated college were like, free coffee and a good percentage rate? Wonderful. Yes. We'll be there.
Sign me up.
Sign me up. So yeah, I remember back in the day where we had good interest rates. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that what I would do if you're just for estimating purposes, I would on this one, I would maybe tone down the percentage return a smidge on the when you get to the distribution aspect. Mm-hmm. And then just have to, I think it's really important with your personal finances, just like to keep an eye on them and update things, even if you do it yearly, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just hard to predict where we'll be at 48. Like what would a bank account be paying you then?
Yeah.
Ideally more than it's paying today, but we don't know. Mm-hmm. So, but I think for estimating purposes, tone down the return a little bit on this. And then I think we'll just have to kind of reevaluate yearly to see where we are. But the overall structure of this works because the money, because even if you, you know, we're estimating return, this concept of using this specific account for a set period of time works because we know that the retirement, because you've put so much money into it, is going to more than cover when we get to that next segment, which is at 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking also, I mean, I guess if for some reason, you know, I needed a little bit extra money in the 48 to 60 range, I mean, you can pull like your contributions to your Roth, right, without a penalty, just not any of the gains?
True. Yes, you can. And there's actually like a bunch of ways around it. This is like a really complicated one, I think. You don't really hear people talking about it. But there's also this thing called like the 72T, which is like an IRS rule where you can take penalty-free withdrawals from an IRA account as long as you meet the requirements.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I think it has to be at least 5 years or until the owner reaches age 59 and a half, whatever period is longer. So like if we were close and you needed money at like 57, we could do that too.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of different options. So I'm not as worried about that. I just like that we saved specifically for the early retirement so that we're not jeopardizing. Because when we had talked about this, my concern with the FIRE movement is if you start pulling from your retirement at 48, it could potentially have to last you like 50 years, which is insane.
Yeah, and you don't know what could happen in that time frame.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time telling you what's going to happen when you're 48 because we have no idea. Mm-hmm. But like to have to try and tell you what's going to happen in 40 years is like basically impossible.
Yeah.
Like no clue. So I like that you're mitigating some of the risk with the longevity of your retirement by earmarking and saving specifically for the early retirement FIRE aspect. And so that we're not pulling your retirement assets until ideally when your retirement age, because at 60, you know, then if we, you know, you live to be age 90, it's 30 years, right?
Yeah.
Or 95, it's 35 years, which is a more reasonable amount of time to be pulling from your investments.
Mm-hmm.
Because hopefully we're still kicking at 95.
Yeah, I hope so.
Right?
I don't know. I just, I get so nervous you know, as you know, you know, I'm an amputee, and I really worry about, you know, how healthy am I going to be once I get older, and will I still be able to walk around as well? And, you know, it's like, oh, if I get sedentary because my prosthetic isn't comfortable, like, you know, it's all downhill from there. And I'm like, thinking about like that far in the future, it's like, I try not to worry about it because there's not anything I can do about it now.
No, and I think mindset is super important. And I think that working towards this FIRE lifestyle where you're outside a lot would probably alleviate some of that. Yeah. You would be out there doing it. And I think a lot of it is like being out there doing it on a regular basis, it keeps you doing it.
Yeah, when I've been out on adventures, like I've met guys that were in their 70s that look, I mean, they look like they were 60, at, you know, at least. They were incredible.
I think the key is just to keep doing it. My uncle is a referee for high school basketball games, mm-hmm. and like all high school things. And you would not believe, I actually have no idea how old he is. He's well over 70 though. Uh-huh. And like, it's always shocking because he's just always, always been with high school kids running around. And so he just doesn't look his age and can mm-hmm. keep up with high school basketball games, which yeah. is like a pretty active
yeah.
sport. That's like to be running around at 75 or 70, whatever age mm-hmm. he is, right? So I think the key is like just being continuous, like staying in the habit. And so I think working towards this FIRE lifestyle will be ideal because it'll get you outside and get you active rather than working. You're doing it on the weekends, mm-hmm. but.
Yeah, I'd be working for, you know, like a decade in a, you know, active field, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the key. My boyfriend is a ski patroller and his plan is to ski patrol. I'm like, what's your plan? He's like, I want to be a ski patroller until I'm 70. I'm like, what after 70? He's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, how are you going to do it till 70? And he's like, well, I was told I just have to do it. You just have to do it. You just have to like keep your body. If you want kind of keep your body in motion almost, mm-hmm. right? Just keep up yeah. with it.
An object in motion so. Stays in motion, as they say.
Yeah, right? You're a rocket scientist. Mm-hmm. Well, fantastic. Well, I think this is great. I am definitely going to use this as an example because I feel like I'm always stressing that the key to leapfrogging in your finances is your budget. It always comes down to your budget
yeah.
and the ability to do side hustles. And you have I'm going to count this as three side hustles. You're taking on a roommate, you have a tenant, and you are working weekends. So it's like three, besides like making really sound financial decisions and
keeping it. It is really kind of feeling like a lot, but then I look at this spreadsheet and I remind myself that it's worth it.
Yeah, totally. And you know, like maybe you do all three side hustles for like a year and decide like, you know what, I need to have my weekends because work is a lot. And then you go down to two side hustles.
Yeah,
you
know, I mean, like everything just being is the negotiable. Tenants, yeah, just having the tenants is a huge thing, and it's, you know, pretty passive income.
Yeah, I would say the tenants is your biggest win because that mm-hmm. knocks down the majority of the mortgage yeah. for sure. Well, Morgan, this is wonderful to have you on. I'm very excited. We're definitely going to have to do a follow-up.
Yeah, definitely. This was so awesome and lots of great advice.
Well, good. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. And so for all of our lovely listeners, you can check us out on Instagram, Future Rich Podcast, and that's where you'll find our most up-to-date information and when we're launching podcast. And you can check out our online classes, which are partnered with SUNY Ulster at www.planancial.com.